As you probably know, we're in the midst of a memberthon, and we're encouraging you to become a member of ArtSound. All you need to do is go to artsound.fm and you can fill out the form there, or you can call 6295 7444.
Poetry on the radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today, some Canberra-area First Nations voices, plus the Rhyming Bugle, news about poetry around Canberra. I'm Peter Searles. Today on Poetry on the Radio, three Canberra-area First Nations voices. First, Jennifer Camara Martinello. She is a writer and visual artist of Arrente, Australian Central Desert, Chinese and Anglo-Celtic descent. As a visual artist, she's renowned in Australia and abroad, particularly for her glass vessels, inspired by traditional Indigenous woven forms. A staunch advocate for First Nations artists, in 1989, she founded the ACT Indigenous Writers Group. She has published several volumes of poetry and won several awards for them. In 2003, she was an ACT Creative Arts Fellow for Literature, and in 2022 was awarded the Medal of the Order of Australia. Here's Jennifer Camara Martinello.
A couple of recent poems published in recent WordPress anthologies. This one is in Not Very Quiet. By virtue of being a First Nations poet, I am by nature a political animal. We all are, simply by virtue of being born into our various circumstances. And so we notice, and we have affinities with political struggles all over the world that affect First Nations peoples whose cultures and languages and generations are endangered by some form, usually by war. So this is called Abrasion, and very timely considering recent happenings. Blue seas, green islands, the governance manipulators' dream of paradise, the high ride on the wave from grass to greenback on the tropic cancer of poverty. And in Australia, the downers put them down and keep them down, extract the juices from the ripened flesh of the socially engineered to be exploited and make them pay for the privilege. Spout fancy rhetoric to the gullible about the betrayal of democracy, about sanctions for sins, as if God alone, through the agency of his corporate deputies, has given holy unction to their own disgraces. And in Fiji, and Samoa, and Tonga, and the Solomons, the rich blue-green carpet of the Pacific, laid out under the throne of governance where the coloniser sits, is wearing thin. Its patience threadbare, and once the strong, rough fibre of its weave is exposed, it becomes abrasive to walk on, with soft white feet clad only in the paper-thin currency of words. This one in Borderless. Borderless is a transnational anthology of feminist poetry edited by Sabo Vasefi, Melinda Smith and Yvette Holt. It is an incredibly awe-inspiring collection of poetry and well worth a read, so I really highly recommend it. This is called Being My Grandmother's, in brackets, after Uluru. And it is my response not only to the Uluru Statement, which, if you recall, was about voice, treaty, truth, but also to the white supremacist responses by the then federal government. I recovered a reverberation of sounds from the rocks, the red earth from the paleo river scars, from beaches like Kamei, half buried in the quicksand of forgetfulness, half disinterred to be rematriated like ancestral remains, ancient in my blood sounds, lost, taken under the blanket suffocations of colonial history for unheard, unheeded, yet enduring, unmuffled, echoing in my children's throats, in my grandchildren's throats, whispering, singing, resurrecting an archaeology of lost sounds, the first ceremonies, the first lullabies, hunting songs and wild songs, laughter and healing songs, creation stories and true stories, a heritage of grandmother's voices millennia long speaking with Uluru's, a genealogy of words once spoken, forever echoing in my throat, in my children's throats, in my grandchildren's throats. I retrieved a broken word today, picked it up off the ground where it had been thrown away, carelessly, like an empty plastic bottle, a bit crushed, like an utterance might crack with emotion between a vowel and a consonant, of a word once meant to be whole, a container of meaning and substance, integrity to sustain futures, like water might quench drought and thirst, nourish and give life, but can't, because someone who didn't know, didn't understand, didn't respect this place, this law, thought it wasn't relevant, that it didn't have a use, a meaning, a place, thought it didn't belong the same way they didn't belong to this place, where words are sacred. Our covenants, not defiled, dismembered, repurposed for political convenience. I heard a bloodless sound after Uluru, a string of words bereft of spirit, life, heart, without skin or pulse to render its speakers worthy of belonging, worthy to be the keepers of the rule of law. Denial is a chasm 2.5 centuries deep. The wound-salted erosion of the land, of our bodies, of our song, the induced deprivation of an ecology where the words absence and truth occur in the same sentence without parole or redemption.
Jennifer Camara Martinello, reading at the University of Canberra's 2022 Poetry on the Move Festival, held at Gorman House. Next, here's Paul Collis. He is a Barkindji person, born in Bourke. He teaches Indigenous Studies and Creative Writing at the University of Canberra, where he received his PhD in 2015. Paul Collis's first novel, Dancing Home, won the UNIPON Award for a previously unpublished Indigenous author in 2016 and was ACT Book of the Year in 2019. His first book of poetry, Nightmares Run Like Mercury, appeared in 2021.
Time passenger. Now, I've been doing some work over at Erindale College trying to help Indigenous and other kids through a program we call Story Ground get a portfolio entry into the university. A lot of Aboriginal kids don't complete their HSC with enough marks, mainly because they're attending so many funerals. If you miss a certain amount of days, you can't pass. So uni's come up with a brilliant idea about portfolio entries. So this poem came after one session out at Erindale about this time last year. It's called Time Passenger. I don't know what it's got to do with Erindale, though. Time Passenger. I sit and watch morning clouds burn. The other side of town is where questions rip about me like salty fat. Really sticky. Ants rush. They rush. They rush the train. They rush the dock. Hide. Look to hide. Look for a seat to ride. Some come on late. Some don't come. Time passenger on a window seat over there where Cohen is, where the light is strong. He said, they can't hurt you there. So sing on. Now here's a poem which I wrote for the Queen. I was thinking about it when I wrote it. It's called The Gun, The Cutlass and The Bible. The bush is cut right back there now. A four-way highway replaces the known bush track. telegraph wires carry the messages. Seems no one remembers the old song lines. That ground is cold, like death. Grey is the colour of the days there. Grey cry and mist falls quietly onto grey ground. Everything's grey there. Cold and grey and abandoned. No ceremonial dances take place atop of the mountain now. There's no smell of sweat or excitement, no songs or clapsticks. The dancers left that dreaming place when the white people came. The gun, the cutlass, the Bible. Killing people who danced earth songs in honour of Mother Earth. Killing the dream. That place stands forgotten by most now. Cars and trucks and trains carry new dreamers over the mountain in air-conditioned style. Flying through the ceremonial place too fast to feel tears that fall quietly on ceremonial ground. Scar makers make men. You can never see how legend has been told to young fellas. You could never see how we shake and were scared. We initiates whisper questions to quiet our shaking to Miami. No longer under the protection of Mother, but on solid ground, our Mother Earth, we stood ready to be cut in the shadow of our history. Lore retold by senior men strengthened our backs. We boys stand together, solid, and we stand alone. This is the way we become men. Skinny legs trembled. Miami, speak Barkindji to me. Yabra, Yabra, Yamri. Miranda, Miranda. The tremble and worrying in us is broken at the sound of his voice. We stand strong in law, now as men. We take our place in history, knowing now how we are important.
Paul Collis, the second of today's three Canberra area First Nations voices on Poetry on the Radio, also reading at the University of Canberra's 2022 Poetry on the Move Festival. The last of our three First Nations voices today is Judith Nangala Crispin, a prolific author and visual artist. In an essay on her website, she explains her complex relation to her forebears. She tells of her quest to uncover what that ancestry, obscured by colonial violence, was. Judith Nangala Crispin spends part of each year living and working with the Walpiri people in the Tanami Desert of northern Australia, and traces her ancestry to the Banneran people of northeastern Victoria and the Riverina, as well as to Ghana, Senegal, France, Ireland, and Scotland. Language alert, this poem includes one poetically appropriate curse word.
This is called The Electric People. Don't linger. Where salt bush gives way to black soil plains, this is no John the Baptist desert with its wild bees and wine. People die out here all the time. Campervan adventurers who found country in art gallery talks by meth-addicted angels and burned for the first time in their lives. When it hits 50 degrees, you can lose your bearings. Just keep walking out over flatlands canny with spiders, stone-capped mountains rising out of earth like surfacing whales. In the dead centre, between Burima and Hidden Valley, the desert talks in mirage and prophetic plants. If you survive the heat, if the water holds out, it might decide to let you live. It might decide to speak. The motorcycle engine dies between termite towers, the dog stained bull dust orange, sky flaming and spectral. Wedge tails are liquid against the sun, whose low light pours through stands of burned acacia, erasing everything. For days I've dreamed of water, sprinklers turning in a garden of roses, a car wash in a suburban petrol station. With our water bladder half empty, we'll make it if we don't blow a tire. At dusk, a magnetic anomaly makes the landscape quiver. Something skitters through the red tail light, and there's an eerie electrostatic sound like wasps humming beneath the earth. Not far from here, there's a biplane engine half buried in kangaroo grass. In the 1930s, a Dragon Rapide crash-landed near No. 12 Bore. Its wings and cabin have long gone to rot, but the engines remain, and maybe it was heatstroke when the pilot doubled back, burning all the fuel they had miles from anywhere but Spinifex. But later he'd say they glimpsed a craft, circular and silver, hovering so low above the Mulga that its wind scared the finches. And crawling from the fuselage of that downed plane, they'd watched it erupt like a snake bird out of Morangi waterhole, shaking off droplets and the dead reeds floating up in its wake to spiral on the surface. Then it turned with startling manoeuvrability and was gone, vanishing into cloud at around 40 degrees azimuth. At 50 degrees, you can lose your bearings. When they found them 11 days later, the crew of VHUVG were ranting about dingoes or something dingo-shaped that glowed like a hallucination of travelling lights, like lumina, like parahelions flanking the sun. I remember my grandmother in her greenhouse watching for flying saucers between orchids and cactus blooms, her polycarbonate ceiling swept by moths and leaves. A transistor radio reports UFO sightings, a missing Cessna in the Bass Strait, and the pilot's last message to air traffic control. It's four bright, it seems to me, like landing lights, at least 1,000 feet above. It's approaching, seems to me that he's playing some sort of game. The thing is just orbiting. It's got a green light, shiny on the outside. It's hovering on top of me again. It's hovering, and it's not an aircraft. Under dark vegetation, a blue radio light bends around her. She's filling notebook pages with an angular hand. October 22, 1978. Diamond-shaped above the falls. October 23rd, lights visible through breaks in the cloud. The night they landed, they looked like rainbow fish seen from the side. It's dangerous travelling alone out here in wet season. We camp in Lancewood and Bulwadi scrub so they won't find us, drawing the desert in around us, rainstorms prowling outside the swag. The dog sleeps so soundly he won't wake now. And maybe it was heatstroke that lured me out under that big night, dry lightning circling the sky's rim. Storm renders everything electric, creature shapes in the Mulga, branches articulating like magician's fingers. Milky Way not yet risen. Delphinus is iridine in the glassy interior of night. Scutum drops from Magellan's lesser cloud like an owl from bushfire smoke. In the northern sky, a vast triangular shape ruptures the stars, bigger than a football field. It blots out Lyra and then Aquila, rearing darkly over Delamere air weapons range, triggering alarms and scrambling the jets. From a certain angle, it seems translucent because its lights are so similar to the stars. For 20 minutes, the wing lights of FA-18 Hornets thread the clouds and then they fade as if the stillness of that triangular craft had entered them. I watch it drift toward the south. Searchlights from its underbelly cross the Spinifex and rock formations so intensely they set the ghost gums alight. Things are always trying to reconnect, to return to some kind of wholeness. Blood pressure in your body, the magnetos of light and lightning, cells sparking like an engine, like a dynamo in your central nervous system, strings and stinging stars, something connects us to the sky. I don't know how long I watched that craft before it vanished into the night's funneled depths, leaving in its place a witchery of concentric circles and a lit sphere so large it touched the ground. I must have drifted off, because I remember startling awake to a half-heard sound like a phone ringing in the dead hours, the calls of nightjars patrolling the dry rivers, owls that are not owls, but electric people with shiny eyes, lightning crowned in a nimbus of rain. It's dangerous being out here alone in wet season. The sky in shards, their strange tesseracts opening, spilling them across the inky sky like stingrays and more coming. At morning, when dawn and the dog filled my motorcycle mirrors, I couldn't find the track out of Sturt's Plateau as if that memory had passed with the innumerable stars. I just remembered the owls. This is a true account, this poem. So if you see me sort of catching my breath in the middle of it, you'll know why. Because this all really happened, and every dog lover in the room is to grab any Valium that you have close by. This is called Voyage to Catherine via Andromeda. Over catfish waterhole, oyster-tinted clouds foreshadow rain. Desert ladies rest in dogwood shade after Sunday's hunt, still wearing their Jesus T-shirts after church. Late light threaded with goanna smoke and rays, the sun folds tangerine across the shallows where my dog moon thrashes, seal white, through algae-darkened reeds. It's King Brown territory, but the snakes have been quiet lately. And I tell myself it's just exhaustion, how he trembles, how he drags himself weakly up the bank. But by the time I've reached him, moon is foaming at the mouth, night already drumming in the Red River gums. The old ladies can't find the bite, but we know, and there's no anti-venom for 700 kilometres, not even for people. The old ladies can't find the bite, but we know. On the phone, the vet in Catherine is blunt and kind. 5 hours past snake bite, she says, the convulsions end and he'll go into cardiac arrest. If his heart holds out, antivenom might save him, but most dogs won't make it. Most are dead by Top Springs. No one drives in the Tanami after dark, when dry storms rearrange the dunes, when night-coloured bison stands like caryatids in the road. I borrow a friend's Toyota. Moon lying rigid across my lap, his teeth bared, and I drive, not slowing, not stopping, just driving and driving until dawn or he dies. We pass into that blackness like a needle. Mount Herbert appears in blue lightning, then darkness swallows the trees. Monsoon makes the desert electric. Floodwaters pool horizon to horizon under bands of solemn stars. Deep space is a globe curving above and below. Galaxies, the drifting nebula, satellites reflecting in the water's beetle black. We travel between mirrored worlds like an orbiting craft, like venom racing toward the heart. Over sounds of engine and thunder and fear, gales erupting from flooded ground, a woman is screaming into the desert, screaming, please, please, don't fucking take my dog. And for a moment, the wind drops. There's a calm that comes when everything is finished. I pull myself together and for the next 6 hours just talk to him, inventing stories of miraculous dogs with bodies of lightning and serpents and rain. I tell him what he means to me. I tell him he's a good dog, winding my voice out like a rope to hold him, to stop him unravelling into that whirring, spinning night. Near Mount Glass, we swerve around a python stretched across the road, its slow head lifting to taste the storm. There's a tailwind coming in from the bombing ranges, carrying radioactive dust. The owls feel it as they blade through cooler currents away from the speeding car. An omen feather holds a moment against the windscreen, then the air takes it. And rushing beside the car, night fills with blinding forms, the familiar ghosts and others. Robin, silvered by headlights in her floating hospital gown. Alfie, with his belt wound tightly around his throat. He tumbles across the bonnet, then out into the bush. We reach Top Springs 5 hours after a snake bite, moon deathly still. If he goes into cardiac arrest, I'll just stop driving, just be with him till it's over, until he passes where I can't follow. I hold my palm against his snout for proof of life and find the rhythm of his breath. 50 kilometres out of Catherine, there's a car on fire, violently beautiful. Embers lift from its fenders like miniature suns, like flecks in a burning lizard's eye. I pull over, but no one's in sight. Just another stolen car, and there's no time. There's no time left. A door in the sky has opened, and travellers pass in both directions. We lose the back end of the Toyota, skidding into Catherine at 2 a.m. A police car does a U-turn to follow, peeling away outside the animal hospital. Older snakes, the vet says, conserve their venom. She says he was lucky. Gives him anti-venom and fluids. She says it was a warning. It's still dark. Birds congregate silently on the supermarket roof. Not a breath of wind. A barely visible aurora is spreading on the low eastern rim, eclipsing Perseus and the pointer stars in Centaurus. We're waiting, as I know some of you do too, when the night seems endless, waiting for those birds to open their beaks, for the madrigals of firetails and corellas, butcher birds, magpies and wrens, for the lion sun to wake and walk among the palms, igniting their fans a brilliant night parrot green. From the Toyota's roof, we watch dawn cross an empty shopping mall car park. Moon, wrapped in bulldust, leans against my arm, solid and planetary, impossibly alive.
Poet and visual artist Judith Nangala Crispin, reading at the Manning Clark House in July 2022.
The Rhyming Bugle. On Monday, February 20, at the Playhouse at the Canberra Theatre Centre, English poet, novelist and playwright for the Royal Shakespeare Company, Kay Tempest, appears. Social commentary with synth grooves. Also coming up this week, on Thursday, February 23, is the next reading at Manning Clark House in Forest. It will feature Lucy Alexander, Andrew Moss and Luke Whitington. Lucy Alexander is a Canberra-based poet who has published two volumes of poetry and appeared in various journals and newspapers. Her most recent book is Strokes of Light from Recent Work Press, 2020. Andrew Moss, based in Goulburn, is a writer and teacher whose poetry has been featured in The Best New British and Irish Poets Anthology, 2019-21, from the Black Spring Press Group, Poetry for the Planet, an Anthology of Imagined Futures, from Letonnerie Press, and Non Bono, an anthology of speculative fiction by BIPOC poets from Sundress Publications. Luke Whitington is a much-travelled poet who also has restored centuries-old buildings in Italy and Ireland and run a multimedia gallery in the latter. His work has appeared in many periodicals in those countries as well as Australia. His publications include two from Ginninderra Press, Only Fig and Prosciutto, and What Light Can Do. Among the Labour government's recently announced key commitments for its national cultural policy, due to be detailed in the May budget, was the creation of Writers Australia, with $19.3 million in funding as part of Creative Australia. Writers Australia's advocacy for writers would include appointing Australia's first poet laureate and determining the winners of the Prime Minister's Literary Awards. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monaghan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. Today's music is from Wave Rider, by the Melbourne-based quartet of pianist-composer Andrea Keller. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid. As you probably know, we're in the midst of a memberthon, and we're encouraging you to become a member of ArtSound. All you need to do is go to artsound.fm, and you can fill out the form there, or you can call, ideally during business hours, 6295 7444, and if you call at other times, we'll get right back to you.